rumors around that this is Britain's revenge for the Boston Tea Party. 3,000 screaming teenagers are at New York's Kennedy Airport to greet, you guessed it, the Beatles. This rock and roll group has taken over as the kingpins of musical appreciation among the younger element. Some music critics call their harmony unmistakably diatonic. Others say it's pandiatomic. Parents say it's just plain pandemonium. Their first meeting with the American press brings forth an interview laced with quips and humor. You'd laugh, too, with a gross of $17 million last year. New York City cops are hard-pressed protecting the Beatles at their hotel. On every side, there is hero worship that recalls the heydays of Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra. With one Beatle bedded with a sore throat, three of the quartet take an airing in Central Park. There was absolutely no truth to the rumor that the zoo's laughing hyena was driven underground.
Do you remember where you were on February 7th, 1964, the day the Beatles landed in the U.S.? If you're like author Penelope Rollins, you were lined up with other rabid Beatles fans waiting for a glimpse of the Fab Four. Or maybe you were screaming hysterically in your living room a few days later as you watched their first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always do. And then while I'm away, I'll ride home every day. And I'll send all my loving to you.
The Beatles' arrival was one of those unforgettable, where were you when events in our history and Americans who lived through it were changed forever. Penelope writes about it now in her new book, The Beatles Are Here, 50 years after the band arrived in America. Writers, musicians, and other fans remember. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Penelope Rollins to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
It is wonderful to have you here. So there is a great photo on the front of the book of these rabid Beatle fans and young girls all screaming and holding their hands out. And you're in the center of the picture.
I'm the center of the picture, and I'm in caught mid-scream, as someone described it. And I was doing a lot of that back then.
What was it about that time and about those four men that could produce such a reaction?
It's interesting. I learned so much in talking to people for the book, and one of the things I learned and also simultaneously remembered was how much we heard about the Beatles before we even heard their music, and information did not flow the way it does now. They were far away, and we heard from across the Atlantic stories that there were girls screaming about this band. That's what we heard first. And I think it was almost like a mass hysteria. I'm not a psychologist. I can't really speak to that in an authoritative way, but it seemed almost infectious. It's as if we knew we were going to scream. And then we heard the music, and the music was that good.
The actual banner you're holding on to says, Beatles, please stay here forever, with the number four, forever.
Yeah.
And this was outside of the Paramount Theater in Times Square.
That's what that was an interesting thing. It actually wasn't. That's the caption in the New York Times. But I know this from one of the girls who I only met recently, who said it can't have been. I was screaming all over New York. She wasn't. So she actually lived in the Bronx. It was harder for her to get around and do all the critical screaming that I was doing. I lived in Manhattan and I could take the bus. So she said it was actually in front of the hotel where they were staying before they went on the Paramount. It was that afternoon.
When you think about that time, it's interesting to see how much of an impact the band still has and the music still has on people, and ultimately this anniversary has on people. And I assume this is something you've been talking about for a long time.
You know, I haven't really. I started the photo was something, it was a part, it was published back when I was 13, and then it disappeared the way newspapers did then, and then it came back. So It hasn't been something I've thought about for a while, but I began to see that it was being published all over the place. It had become somewhat iconic, and I think that made me think, oh, this is so interesting. I wrote an article about it for Vogue magazine, and one of the girls got in touch with me, and I hadn't even known her name 50 years ago. And so we started talking about the Beatles, and she introduced me to two of the other girls, and that made me realize what a fascinating story it was. And then I realized the anniversary was coming up, so that's how the book came about.
And you write that, and I believe it was in the Vogue article, but in the book, your mortal fear was that your mother would find out that you were doing this.
Yeah, that was a bit of a deep trouble moment. My mother went away for the weekend, leaving us with our maternal grandmother, my two brothers, and me. And her parting words were, "Do not go down and scream outside the Beatles Hotel when I'm gone." So no sooner was the door shut than out I went, because I couldn't not. I was madly in love with George, and I knew he was my future husband. I only had to get down there and scream, and somehow this would take place. So what happened that day was a photographer came along, took the picture, and it ran in the New York Times. So my mother came home to all sorts of feedback of an unwelcome kind from my point of view. The phone began to ring, and it was her friend saying, "Isn't that Penelope in the newspaper today?" So I was in deep trouble.
The article written, interestingly, by Gay Talese, which is certainly another icon to be associated with, interestingly
enough. That was a fascinating angle to me, to suddenly go back and see that's who'd written it, and then to see it was in that really lively new journalism style that he was such a pioneer of.
How close did you get? They have you screaming and you moved around. How close did you get?
I got nowhere, actually, and I went to three concerts and screamed at all of them and never saw a Beatle, never glimpsed a Beatle in a limousine. So it was completely futile, if you think of it. And at the concerts, they were the size of ants. They were tiny figures in the distance, and you couldn't hear a thing.
So when it came to the book, what is it that you wanted to talk to other fans who remembered and what they remembered? And did you see a through line? Did you see the comparisons to a universal feeling, if you will?
I did. I commissioned some really terrific writers to write for the book, and then I opened it up by doing some oral histories of fans and people who weren't writers, notably a lot of musicians and just different people who witnessed the phenomenon. And there were quite a few through lines. I mean, I really tried for a diverse group, and I really got a very consistent story. One of the points quite a few people made, including Joe Queenan, who's that wonderful comic writer, was President Kennedy had been assassinated 6 weeks before, and I don't think we can emphasize enough what a grim state this country was in. And I found it fascinating to see how the media had really whipped us into a frenzy, notably the AM radio disc jockeys of the day, who I remember as if it were yesterday. And I think they were falling on a positive story, and we young girls were ready to scream, to put it mildly. The other point that kept coming through was, there's a reason we're still making such a fuss about the band today, which is they were that good. And I think I quote Bob Dylan in here saying, they were showing us the direction in which music had to go. And they did that over and over for the length of their career, their short career. And that's really why they endure to this day. They were so good. I was listening to the Peter Asher, the music producer and former musician himself, and he said they were perfect. And I thought, well, that kind of sums it up.
I was fascinated as well, and when you look at the picture that's on the front cover of the book, it shows the teen girls, and yourself included, lined up. And in the book, there are so many fans who are male, And then when you pull out in the picture, you see a lot of men as well, and young men, and it was a universal. There were all kinds of different reasons that people were there, but this was not just a teen girl thing.
It wasn't. We were just certainly the loudest cohort, but there were all sorts of boys, and the book is full of comments like that too. Fran Lebowitz talks about boys who suddenly appeared in school after the Ed Sullivan Show with their hair combed forwards and this kind of thing. They had a huge impact on all of us for different reasons, I think.
I saw Paul McCartney this past June for the first time in Brooklyn. And
yeah.
I was amazed by, the performance is incredible. He's incredible. Okay, there's that. But
how
the music affects people, just how people would dance, how people would shut their eyes and go into almost a trance.
Right.
I've never seen anything like that. And that's 50 years later.
That's the part that's incredible. And I must say, I've looked at this whole anniversary in a state of astonishment at one article after another, and it's as if the public can't get enough of them. And the thing about Paul McCartney is his songwriting is so fabulous, and it still speaks to people, the old songs and the new.
And yet there is the tragic sense of the loss of John Lennon, of course, and George Harrison. And yet it seems that the adulation would be there regardless of the presence being taken from us.
I think so. And the part that one of the themes that kept coming through was how joyous the experience was. I mean, as I looked at Beatlemania, and you realize it's absolutely absurd, the whole thing, but it's quite a cheerful, nice phenomenon. And there's a whiff of that even now, that they just bring us joy, their music, the experience of them, the mass nuttiness this country went through together about them.
And it is said over and over and over again, and I'm assuming you agree with this, that we will never see anything like this again in our lifetime.
It's funny. Someone once said to me these wise words, which is, the world is full of people who have made idiots of themselves trying to predict the future. And with all, you know, I do agree with that statement. One shouldn't try, but it sure seems unlikely to me that anything like this could happen, in part because more than half the country watched the Ed Sullivan Show. Mm. We're not as united now.
No.
Media is all over the map, and we're all over the map. So I can't imagine it would happen again.
And
but then again, I may be contradicted.
And again, but also, it's been done now.
And another thing that's fantastic about them is my son is 25, and I'm a classical music nut, but I made sure he heard every Beatles album growing up. And they speak to his generation as much as to mine.
The book is fascinating and just lovely. It's called The Beatles Are Here, 50 Years After the Band Arrived in America. Writers, musicians, and other fans remember. It is published by Algonquin Paperbacks. Penelope Rollins, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your memories. A delight
thank
to have you,
you
here.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
One, two, three, four!
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.